Well, welcome everybody. It's good to see you all. I don't know if you... Has anybody got any idea what you're here to hear about? Body and the brain. I think that was the interpretation of the longer winded version of what I sent. But what I meant was we're going to be talking today about the connection between the gut and the brain and the way that God has designed us. Particularly in the relevance to mental health and just to neurodegeneration and things as well, in terms of looking after your brain as you get older, because none of us really want to go senile, do we, in our old age? But mental health, as you know, is a massive issue, and it's becoming a bigger and bigger issue. Last year, you know, I was horrified just to follow a few... just news reports about pastors committing suicide. There were several fairly well-known pastors in the United States that committed suicide. Mental health touches our family very closely as well, so it's something that I'm very, very interested in. And I think that there's an epidemic in our young people at the moment around anxiety and depression. And there's a myriad of factors involved in that. I mean, I think we're overstimulated. Our brains are massively overstimulated and underfed. Let's put it like that. So that's what we're talking about today, is the gut-brain connection, and particularly how it pertains to mental health. But I want to start, as I always do, by just highlighting really the spiritual foundation of what we're talking about today. But I suppose I should introduce myself first. I am a clinical nutritionist. I work at the Narangbar Valley Medical Centre on the north side of Brisbane. And I suppose I straddle the fence between conventional and natural medicine. I suppose that's the best way to put it. I have a naturopathic mindset about medicine. Has anybody heard the term functional medicine? Yep. I guess I work from a functional medicine paradigm in the area of nutritional medicine. So my degree is in nutritional medicine. So we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And I think that our belief in God and our belief in our creation by God really should shape the way that we approach our health. And unfortunately, our Western medical system has, for the last 160 years since Darwin first put forward the theory of evolution, been based on a false scientific premise. It's been based on the idea that we are just, you know, beings of an accident of evolution. We are randomly evolving cells rather than created human beings fearfully and wonderfully made. And I think as Christians, we've really got to... It doesn't mean that everything in conventional medicine is wrong, and it doesn't mean that everything in natural medicine is right either. But I think we have to come at our journey with health and our approach to our health management from what is it that God wants for us? What is it that He requires of us in the way that we manage our bodies and our health? See, I think every one of us is created by this powerful, creative God. And we are a perfect integration of body, soul, and spirit. And our physical being is deeply connected and affected by our spiritual and emotional experiences. And the exciting thing is that science is starting to affirm creation more and more. I mean, I just get so excited about this stuff because it just proves my faith over and over and over again. How many people have heard that the tailbone or the appendix are leftovers of evolution, unnecessary parts of our anatomy? Put your hand up. I'm going to need, because of your masks today, I need lots of like physical interaction, okay? I remember being 13, having my appendix removed, and the doctor coming in and telling me that, you know, it was no big deal. My appendix was just a leftover from evolution that was a totally unnecessary part of the appendage. And I remember at 13 thinking, oh, God, like, how does that fit with my worldview? And I actually felt a bit shaken in my faith as a little 13-year-old girl who'd been taught evolution in school and then taught creation at home. I thought, well, how does that work if the appendix is not necessary? Well, you know what? The appendix is possibly one of the most crucial parts of our anatomy. in terms of our gut health. Does anybody know what the appendix is for? Paul?
It lubricates your stomach.
It does that, yep. There's a whole lot of little immune cells in the appendix, and it also has a reservoir of microbes that are ready to repopulate our gut whenever we've gone through trauma or even it had antibiotics and the gut needs to be repopulated. So after you've had diarrhea, for example, you know, and everything gets swept away, you need that repopulation. So the appendix plays this absolutely crucial role. And scientists...
Sorry.
Can you hear me?
It's because of the rain, it's really easy.
I don't know how to use the equipment.
Is it easier without it, or is it worse?
No,
worse, okay.
Doors closed down.
All right. Yeah.
Might help.
I don't want anyone to miss out on hearing about diarrhea.
So, who's had their appendix out? Keep your hand up if you've had gut issues in your life, as in IBS or, you know, anything like that. So there is a much higher risk of irritable bowel syndrome in patients who've had their appendix removed. Surprise, surprise. Another study in the Journal of Depression and Anxiety found that childhood appendectomy was also a risk factor.
Oh, you bring the speaker in front of the microphone.
Front, yeah.
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 You need a hand.
You right?
Yep. There we go.
Yep, that's as far
that's
as
the plug's going down.
That's why I married him. Carry heavy things for me. So, yeah, so this other, they found that childhood appendectomy, so having your appendix removed in childhood, was a risk factor in adult mental health disorders. Now, what's the connection? Sorry?
Would that have, like, if you had your appendix set up because of not having a burst appendix or not having inflamed but due to another operation, would that still be the same?
Absolutely, yeah. So if you're missing the appendix, you're missing that reservoir of microbes, then it affects both your gut health and your mental health. And the reason for that is because there is a gut-brain connection. I'm going to talk to you about that today. That's a picture of a brain with Alzheimer's that has atrophied. It looks like kind of very dried up moldy cauliflower, doesn't it? And they've also discovered, this is another Lancet article, increasing clinical and preclinical evidence implicates the microbiome.
Yep. Can you stay behind me?
Is that better? Implicates the microbiome as a possible key susceptibility factor for a number of different neurological disorders. So there's lots of different studies on these, including Alzheimer's, autism disorder, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, stroke, and, of course, also depression. Another Lancet article titled Nutritional Psychiatry, Where To Next, talks about depression and mood disorders being linked to changes in our gut flora. Says in particular, the gut-brain axis is an increasing focus of attention given the recent understanding regarding the importance of the gut microbiota in affecting brain and behaviour. And the recognition that diet is a key modulator of gut microbiota and gut health. Put your hand up if you've ever had butterflies in your tummy. Keep your hand up if you would say that you're a little more susceptible than normal people to emotion affecting your gut. If you've ever vomited out of fear or anxiety. Yep. So the reason for that, of course, or is anybody, you probably don't want to put your hand up and admit to this, but does anybody get diarrhea when you're stressed? The reason for that is that there is a great sensitivity in the gastrointestinal tract to emotion. So physiological changes in the gut occur in response to the release of certain neurotransmitters from emotion in our brain. So the chemicals in our brain that control mood and behaviour, particularly, of course, adrenaline is an obvious one, when we have fear and we have that feeling of fight or flight, our gut gets flooded with, our entire body gets flooded with adrenaline, affects our gut, and also then affects the brain. And then from the other direction, neurotransmitters in the brain are first formed in the gut. So their synthesis and balance is influenced by microbes in the gut. So there's a bi-directional relationship between the gut and the brain. And there's various communication systems that are involved in that, some of which we've literally only just in the process of discovering.
Just a question. If you take probiotics, does that help alleviate the problems with appendix or any other gut problems?
I'm going to talk about that at the end. And I'm actually going to have time for questions at the end as well. Okay. So, yeah, I will definitely talk about that. That's a really good question. So there is a... various ways in which there is communication between the gut and the brain and between the brain and the gut. It's now well established that stress causes negative changes to the gut microbiome and contributes to intestinal permeability, also known as leaky gut. Anybody heard of leaky gut? Yep. So leaky gut occurs from all sorts of different things, but it can occur actually just from stress. It can occur from things like chlorine in our water supply, chemicals in our food, pesticides on our food can irritate the gut lining and cause changes to the epithelial barrier. I'm just going to show you that one. So toxins, drugs can affect the integrity of the epithelial barrier. When I talk about epithelial barrier, I'm talking about the lining of our gut. And it should be a lovely mesh that allows food, vitamins and minerals to pass through into our bloodstream. It should not allow food proteins and larger molecules to get into our bloodstream. When that happens, we actually trigger what we call chronic inflammation. We trigger out an immune response because the immune system goes, there's a foreign protein in my blood. What's it doing there? And tries to mount a response.
Hey, Debbie, if you stay on that side of the podium, you won't get the feedback.
Okay, I'm not even noticing the feedback. Is it still a problem?
Yep.
Sorry, everybody.
Sorry.
I've got the ability to shut things out with my brain. Is that better?
Yep.
Okay. This actually came from a journal about the stresses on people in combat, so soldiers who've gone through the stress of combat and the way that it affects dysbiosis in their gut. So all the different stresses, lack of sleep, medications, disruption to circadian rhythm, diet, all of these things have an effect on the integrity of the epithelium, okay? And we get dysbiosis in the microbes in here and also a breakage in that barrier when we are living with that kind of stress. So that's talking about the way in which things, damage to our gut then causes changes in the brain. But let's talk about the other direction as well. So when I talk about neurotransmitters, I'm sorry, I know I've got a real variety of people here, some people who are medical and some people who are not. But who knows what I mean when I'm talking about neurotransmitters? Just a few people. So neurotransmitters are the chemicals in our brain that control mood and behaviour. So here's a couple of really well-known ones. Most people have heard of serotonin, because most of the antidepressant drugs, which, I think something like 25% of people end up on an antidepressant at some point in their life, those drugs are targeting serotonin, of course. Serotonin is the happy one usually. It promotes happiness and regulates anxiety, helps with sleep. Dopamine promotes focus and attention. It's also something that makes you feel really good. So you hear about dopamine-seeking behaviours, which is addictive behaviours, where you get that rush of dopamine in the brain. GABA is a one that a lot of people haven't heard of, but it promotes peace and well-being. So it's something that if you suffer with a lot of anxiety, you want more GABA. norepinephrine, you know, adrenaline and noradrenaline, they mediate attention and focus as well. Now, 90% of your body's serotonin is actually found in the gut. So microbes themselves are involved in the production of neurotransmitters, and the molecular signaling that they're involved in also connect the state of your gut with the state of your brain. Here's another little aside that's kind of really fascinating. In 1992, endocannabinoids were discovered. And they are other little molecules, basically, or they're a molecular signaling system that connects the microbes in our gut with chemicals in our brain. Literally, just discovered in 1992, named after cannabis because of the effect that cannabis has on the brain. So anyway, hopefully I've convinced you with probably a lot of technical things that some of you are kind of like, what is she talking about? That there is a very strong connection between our gut and our brain. And it's important that we care for both when we're talking about issues of mental health. There's also an even deeper level of harm to our bodies when negative emotions and microbial imbalance rule. So when I talk about microbial imbalance or dysbiosis, I'm talking about the kinds of bacteria that live in our gut. There are trillions and trillions of bacteria living in our gut. In fact, they outnumber our human cells or our human DNA. this is a very much a new frontier in medicine, is understanding in personalized medicine how manipulation of the microbiome can affect certain diseases. So, for example, we know that the microbiome, in other words, the types of bacteria that are flourishing in the gut of a child with autism, are totally different to the types of bacteria flourishing in a child that is neurotypical. We also have discovered that to be true of virtually everything. So people with obesity have a totally different microbiome in terms of the levels of the different bacteria than people who are thin. There's differences as well with particular diseases. So people with autoimmune diseases have a unique microbiome compared to those that don't. I work with a lab in Melbourne that does DNA testing of your microbiome, so they can give you sort of using DNA testing, a list of all the different bacteria that are alive in your gut. And the lead scientist of that actually diagnosed somebody with bowel cancer based on the proliferation of a particular bacteria that's associated with colorectal cancer in that patient. And they had, where there should be like less than 1% or something, like tiny little amount, their microbiome was like 75% this particular bacteria in that species. And so she was able to refer him to an oncologist who identified a cancer that had not been identified based on the type of microbes she saw in this sample. So it's a fascinating new area of medicine.
Hey, Vivi, do you mind if we try and fix the sound?
Yeah, do we need to do that? Is it really... Can everybody hear me?
Is it okay?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, just me.
You're a bit deaf, babe.
No, it's just
a bit ringy.
Yeah, sorry. So the other area where this is really fascinating, okay, and this is one of my loves, is there's an even deeper level of harm to our bodies when we have the wrong types of flora in our gut, and when we are living in a situation where there's a lot of trauma or negative emotions. And that's in the area of epigenetics and our DNA. Now, we're learning more about DNA than ever before. Science now is really proving Darwin wrong when it comes to evolution. There is very little variation in the DNA between ancient man and man today? Virtually none. There are tiny single nucleotide polymorphisms, so small genetic changes that are like punctuation marks or little changes in DNA sequence that occur quite often, and we all have them, okay? What we're learning is that there is an epigenetic area, which are tags on top of DNA, that actually switch those genes on and off and have an ability to regulate our cellular, our DNA expression and all types of areas of our biochemistry. So what that shows in terms of the difference between creation and evolution is that Darwin was wrong. There's no major change to DNA that's occurring from species to species. But there are adaptative changes that occur within species in response to trauma, disease, our environment. And when we actually have the environment for our bodies that God intended, the genetic expression is healthy. And when we have an environment that God did not intend, the genetic expression is faulty. Does that make sense? So it is, and that's when we get cancers and all those sorts of things as well. There's a whole new field of the science of epigenetics and cancer, and it's absolutely fascinating. This is God's way of making it possible for us to adapt our environment and respond to threats. Just listening to the last session, I was just applying it in this area of our bodies. You know, the whole of Deuteronomy, it's about, obedience equals blessing, disobedience equals curse. And it's the same with our health and with our bodies. Obedience leads to blessing, disobedience leads to curse. We can engage in behaviours that will be destructive to our health. We can engage in behaviours that are going to bring healing and wholeness. And it's, a lot of the time we don't even think about that as being something as part of the application of our faith, do we? We don't necessarily think that the way that we choose to eat can be an act of worship to God. But it absolutely is. Everything that we do should be an act of worship to God, and we should be seeking to please Him in the choices that we make. And the fascinating thing is that our microbiome is damaged to the point that inflammatory and disease-causing bacteria proliferate and dominate in our gut when we eat man-made synthetic junk food. That's just how it works. And when we eat food that is the closest to the way that God made it, that's when our microbiome becomes healthy. So eating a plant-based diet that is good in whole, real foods fosters a healthy microbiome. And eating synthetic foods with preservatives, chemicals, refined sugars, refined flours, all the things that we've done as human beings to make things simple, to make money, to tamper with God's intention, basically causes the destruction of our microbiome. I need some nods or something because you're all just looking at me with these masks.
Totally agree.
So I'll give you an amen.
Okay, thank you. That's good. That's good.
Preach it, sister.
Yay. I've lost my... Yeah, oh, there we go. So your genes can be turned on or off by epigenetics, which are these little tags on our DNA. Your epigenetic signaling is affected by environmental changes, which is the adaptation, such as trauma, toxins, diet, and nutrition. And good nutrition has been shown to effectively switch good genes on and turn bad genes off. Now, I put them in inverted commas because it ain't that black and white, of course, but I'm trying to simplify it. And guess what? Our epigenetic regulation is affected as well by our gut microbiota. So there are chemical signaling occurring from the bacteria in our gut that is actually manipulating our epigenetics. Isn't that amazing? It's just, it blows my mind. Like, the more I dig into it, the more I am amazed by the way that God has made us to live with these commensal bacteria and beneficial bacteria in our bodies. They're almost like a second organ or a second system. You know, we talk about the endocrine system, hormones. We talk about the nervous system, you know, in terms of its structure. But our microbiome, the bacteria in our bodies, really functions like another organ because it is involved in regulating other parts of our biochemistry and anatomy. And so we want to take care of those microbes. We want to have the right types proliferating. We want to avoid disease-causing bacteria and inflammatory-causing bacteria from proliferating. So I was speaking before about single nucleotide polymorphisms, because I do want to talk a little bit more about mental health and the way that I approach mental health in terms of treatment. So I treat lots of patients that have issues with depression and anxiety, and we do it from a functional medicine point of view. Some of them come to me because they're on antidepressants, they don't like the side effects and they'd like to come off. Some of them just want to be healthy while remaining on antidepressants. Some of them want to avoid going on antidepressants in the first place. And it's not as simple as just, okay, let's just fix your gut and get your microbiome perfect and then all will be well. Okay, I'm not going to simplify it like that. There are epigenetic changes that can occur within DNA that actually affect the way that your body balances the neurotransmitters in your brain. So that is why depression and anxiety and some of these mental health disorders run in families. So you see that, you know, suicide, for example, runs in families. You know, grandfather committed suicide, then the grandson commits suicide, then the brother commits, and you think, far out, what has happened to this family? But there are genetic reasons that can be passed down through the generations. Oh, by the way, I just also wanted to mention the fascinating thing about epigenetics and those tags on DNA. They affect, so a trauma or a decision that you make in your life that creates trauma affects you at the cellular level and can affect the epigenetic changes on your DNA. And guess how many generations they're passed down to?
3 to 4
generations. They're passed from to the third and fourth generation, just as the Bible says. Of course, there is redemption as well. So, you know, God is able to turn that around. But I think it's absolutely fascinating the way this whole area of science matches up with what God has already told us in his word. So I was talking about SNP. So single nucleotide polymorphisms are these little changes to our genetics that can affect the balance of serotonin in our brains and some of the other neurotransmitters as well. Think of it as a sentence. Like this, like a man, comma, without a woman, comma, is nothing. Or basically when you change the punctuation, it can change the meaning of the sentence. So now I've forgotten how the other bit goes. Can somebody give me the sentence if you change the punctuation?
There's another one. Let's eat, comma, grandma.
That's it.
Let's eat grandma.
That's a better one. Let's eat grandma, as in let's go and eat together with grandma, or let's eat grandma. Depends on the change of the punctuation. And so these little changes can be like that. They can be like punctuation changes in our DNA that affect the expression of the gene that codes for an enzyme that regulates a neurotransmitter. So an enzyme that regulates serotonin, for example, is MAO. There's MAO A, regulates catecholamines in the brain. There are epigenetic changes that can happen as well as actual SNPs that can happen in a person, which means that the enzyme is upregulated or downregulated and a person can have less serotonin and more dopamine. And so they're the sort of person that struggles to maintain good levels of serotonin but has very high levels of dopamine and adrenaline. therefore they live with anxiety and depression together. Does that make sense? So there's all sorts of interesting ways in which nutrition can affect that as well. This is a biochemical map of showing the BH4 cycle in the middle, where neurotransmitters are made. So tryptophan becomes serotonin, tyrosine becomes dopamine. That's the MAOA, both enzyme and gene that I just spoke about, that regulates levels of serotonin. Down the bottom, we have the GAD gene, which regulates levels of GABA, GABA being the peaceful, calming one. So if you're anxious, you want more GABA. And there's all kinds of ways in which these things interact in our biochemistry, and they're influenced by the foods that we eat. So it's not just our microbiome that's important, it's also our nutrition in terms of our genetics, in terms of the kinds of deficiencies that can affect the making of our neurotransmitters. So I wanted to get practical and actually talk about, hopefully I've convinced you that you've got to have good gut bacteria in order to have good mental health, and you also need to have good mental health in order to have good bacteria. So it's a kind of a vicious cycle. If you get off that cycle, it gets worse, goes round and round and round. You've got to have an intervention. I think that, I'm going to talk about this a bit more at the end, but I just love Jesus. And, you know, he is the bringer of peace, isn't he? I remember before we went to Africa and I was just diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and this doctor said to me, you can't go to Africa as a missionary anymore because it's going to be too stressful and you'll just make your disease worse. And I thought, that's probably true. But surely it's about the way that I deal with stress and respond to stress that is the problem. Because I can tell you that we have had plenty of stress living in Australia since we got back from Africa. Life just really sucks, doesn't it? Life is hard. We live in a fallen world. We live in a world where, you know, relationships break down, where there's pain, where there's sin, where there's abuse, where bad things happen, and you live with emotional trauma at different times. But walking with Jesus, he is the source of our peace, and he's the starting point for bringing that peace into our minds that can change the makeup of our gut. So dwelling in the presence of God and dwelling in his peace can heal your gut. And healing your gut can help your brain as well to function. So being obedient to God in what you eat also can help you to have a balanced brain in terms of mood. And it's really, really simple. It's like I said before, the foods that God wants us to eat that foster that good health in our bodies and our brains are all the foods that are as close to the real thing that he originally intended as possible. Unfortunately, grain growing today has undergone such incredible changes in, genetic modification, GMOs, etc., that I believe a lot of grains today, also to do with their bread in order to... Sorry, this is a bit deviating, but I hope you don't mind. Grains have been bred, genetically modified, so that they have a high resistance to pests. And in doing that, they have increased the amount of lectins in the grains that God intended it to be there. So God intended a certain amount of lectins and pests to be part of the whole thing, I think. And we've just like got rid of all the pests by increasing the lectins in the grain. And those lectins are an irritant to the gut lining. And they actually rip holes in our gut. And the worst one, unfortunately, is wheat. So wheat has just been so genetically modified. The bread that we eat is no way resembles what Jesus ate 2,000 years ago, unfortunately. But the closer that we can get to the way that God made our food to be, fruits, vegetables, you know, nuts, seeds, you know, all the things that he made on the earth for us to eat, the more that we eat those things, the better our health and our gut health. And the more that we eat man-made foods, you know, packaged cakes and biscuits where the fats have been made solid at room temperature so the thing will be preserved and sit there for 3 months before you open the packet and eat it. those things are really destructive to our gut and to our health. So it's that simple. Are we going to choose this, which leads to disease, and are we going to choose this, which leads to life and health, the way that God meant it to be? So I just wanted to get a little bit practical before we go into the question time as well and just give you a few tips on, you know, something you can actually take away. Feel free to take a photo of the slide if you want to. What can you do to feed your brain? Well, the B vitamins are really essential. So B vitamins are the... If we don't have B vitamins, we can't make serotonin. So serotonin requires B6, B2, B3, very importantly, B12, folate. We can't make our neurotransmitters without B vitamins in our diet. How many people do you know who never ever eat a raw vegetable? Like our teenagers. All our teenagers are suffering with severe depression and anxiety at the moment. How many of them actually eat a raw vegetable? It's just all carbs and meat. B vitamins can only be found in raw food. They're a water-soluble vitamin, so they're destroyed by cooking. So you have to eat raw foods, raw plant foods, in order to get the precursors that allow your body to make the neurotransmitters. We need protein, amino acids. Amino acids are the precursors. Tryptophan, one of the highest meats in tryptophan. Tryptophan is the beginning of serotonin. Turkey meat, very high in tryptophan. You also can get it from eggs and legumes and nuts and seeds and things as well. Minerals like zinc and magnesium, very, very important as catalysts for the enzymatic reactions that are part of the process of making our neurotransmitters. Good fats. We know, going back to that Alzheimer's brain, that healthy omega-3 fats, so good fats and oils, so the ones like olive oil, the ones they ate in ancient times before we figured out some scientific way of making them solid at room temperature for preservative purposes. Those good old-fashioned oils, coconut oil, olive oil, those fats are really good for us and actually very, very good for our brains, which our brain is made of cholesterol. Our brain needs fats. Cholesterol is not a bad thing. Cholesterol, without cholesterol, your brain's going to shrivel up and die, and you can't make hormones without cholesterol either. So there is good cholesterol. We need good fats in the diet. You might want to take a photo of that one as well. This is just a recipe that I give a lot of my patients, where I vary it according to whatever their particular needs are. Sometimes, you know, there'll be other things in it. But these are the sorts of things that you can do to foster healthy gut microbes. We need both probiotics and prebiotics for a healthy microbiome. Now, prebiotics... Some of our microbes actually make the prebiotics that other microbes eat. Isn't that fascinating? So some of our good bacteria, we need to be there so that it can produce more food for the other bacteria. And probiotics like arabinogalactan, like GOS, like some of those actually are involved in some of that molecular signaling that I was talking about as well. So the actual chemicals in the prebiotics. So when I talk about prebiotics, I'm talking about the food that our bacteria eat. When I talk about probiotics, I'm talking about the bacteria themselves. Does everybody understand that distinction? Yep. So prebiotics themselves can be involved in molecular signaling. How fascinating is that with the brain? Probiotics, obviously, really very, very strongly involved and involved in making B12. I mean, our probiotics, our bacteria actually make B12 and some of the precursors to the neurotransmitters, as well as synthesizing the neurotransmitters themselves in the gut. So this is a smoothie that if you have it every day as a daily habit, something like this, it can actually be something that fosters a healthy microbiome or a healthy gut by feeding your bacteria with the right food. For a normal average person, eating prebiotics is enough. You don't necessarily need to take probiotics. In fact, we can manipulate the microbiome of a person very effectively through diet. In most cases. Well, maybe not today. Some people have reasons why they just can't maintain good bacteria as easily as the person next to them. Turn to the person next to you and say, I can make good bacteria. I reckon approximately half of you just told a lie. And the half of you that were told a lie are the half that, well, going back to the beginning, maybe you had your appendix removed. Maybe you had chronic ear infections as a child and you had, like, antibiotics all through your childhood. Maybe you've always, you know, I don't know, drunk Coke. Coca-Cola, which dissolves rust off coins and also destroys your microbiome. Maybe you've had a lot of chemicals in your food, like you've drunk diet soft drink, which is even worse. I'm not a fan of sugar, but I tell you what, I am absolutely not a fan of diet soft drink. That stuff is lethal to the microbiome and to the brain for other reasons. But those people may require actual repopulating with probiotics. And unfortunately, science seems to show us that no matter how much probiotic you take, once you stop taking a probiotic, if you're in that camp, the other person in that camp, telling the lie that you can make good probiotics because you can't, is people that have a genetic problem with the ability to make the mucosal lining that the bacteria feed on. So there's a gene called FUT2 that is part of that. And some people have genetic variations of that gene that make it almost impossible for them to maintain a healthy gut flora on their own when they have had bad experiences knock it out in childhood. So some of us need extra help, and you kind of need that help ongoing, because studies show that once you've stopped taking a probiotic, after 3 days, it looks like there's nothing there. And I've seen this in patients, because I test the flora of my patients quite often. I've seen this in patients where they're like completely deficient in a certain bifidobacterium, because and they were taking that probiotic up until 5 days before the test, and it just disappeared between then and the test. So some of us do need some probiotics. I picked out a few here. So there's a whole lot of different types of probiotics. Basically, the lactobacillus species and the bifido species are the types that you very often find in the probiotics that you buy, because they're the desirable ones. They're the ones that are anti-inflammatory, that promote good health, that help, you know, guard against cancer and other things. These ones have all been shown to play a key role in regulating our neurotransmitters and balancing our mood. They did an experiment. Rats, where they kept these. They had these sterile rats, basically, that had no bacteria. They took feces from depressed patients and put them into these rats. So, in other words, they put the type of bacteria that were in the depressed patients into these rats, and all the rats became severely depressed. Speaking of poo transplants, anybody heard of poo transplants?
Yep.
Fecal transplants. That seems to be a promising way in which people who do have this issue where their microbiome has been knocked out for all those reasons I said, and it's almost impossible to get that normal bacteria balance back. That is showing some promise in, but we don't have enough evidence about it yet, but it is showing some promise that fecal transplants can be one way of actually repopulating a person who's got those imbalances.
But it tastes terrible.
somebody has invented poo tablets where they're putting the poo of healthy people into capsules for you to swallow. I don't know whether I'd quite be able to bring myself to do that. I just wanted to finish with this verse, because I know that Paul, in context, was talking about, you know, something bigger than what I'm talking about today, but I just love the way that God, through his word, highlights things that are just absolute truths for all the ages. Urge you to present your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this age of diet, soft drinks and junk food, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I love this, that, you know, it's the bodies being presented to God as living sacrifices is part of the transforming of our mind, that you may discern what is the good and pleasing, perfect will of God. So, any questions? Yep, starting with you.
I think I must have missed something there. When you were talking about the prebiotics, what are prebiotics?
Prebiotics are the food that bacteria in our gut want to eat. So we get prebiotics from plant foods, things like inulin and pectin. Pectin, you know, from fruit, you know, apple pectin. Those are the sorts of things, or the sorts of sugars that, and fibres that our probiotics need to proliferate, to generate. So prebiotics are the food, probiotics are the bacteria. And we need both, and we can manipulate our microbiome very effectively with appropriate prebiotics. And the modern diet is very devoid of prebiotics. An organic, vegetable, plant-based diet is extremely rich in prebiotics. They've done fascinating studies on this. I did see a documentary actually on Catalyst, or one of those, recently, where they were actually specifically looking at the microbiome of severely anxious people, so people with general anxiety disorder, where they couldn't leave the house, they had phobias and, you know, really extreme mental illness. And they found that their microbiome had a particular profile that was very inflammatory. They were bacteria that let off chemicals like ammonia that affect the brain and cause brain fog and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And when they changed the diet of these people to the sorts of prebiotics that the bifidobacterium and the lactobacillus love to eat, their depression and anxiety symptoms disappeared. So it's absolutely, fascinating. We can manipulate the microbiome of people through prebiotics very effectively. It's just that some people need a little more help because we've got genetic weaknesses, or we've really knocked our microbiome out. Next question. Yep.
I just wanted to ask about dental health and the importance of dental health for gut health as well.
Excellent question. One of the bacteria that I keep seeing come up in one of the tests that I do with patients that have severe diarrhea and gastric distress is a bacteria called Dialista that is found in the mouth. It's like it's an oral bacterium. And so I'm able to tell from that the patient has had some sort of abscess in their mouth or some sort of infection under a tooth. In one case, the patient didn't know they had it. They went to the dentist and found they had a brewing infection, and that was part of why they'd become really unwell. Oral health is very, very important, and you can get infections in the mouth that will go into your gut. And I can tell you because I'm picking them up in these stool samples in these patients, and I've picked up probably 3 or 4 in the many different samples that I've done with patients recently, and they've all been patients that have had recent dental work.
Yeah. I suppose it reduces inflammation. If you've got good gut health, it would reduce inflammation.
Yeah,
it goes the other way too.
Yeah, so there's so many things that I would have loved to talk about today. The inflammation. Inflammation is a chronic state of being where your immune system is on hyper alert. And there's all sorts of chemicals that are involved and chemicals that are expressed when inflammation is going on in the body. And inflammation affects the brain. And we know that the brains of depressed and anxious people are inflamed. We know that inflammation plays a very key role in mental health disorders. There's more and more science and more study around that. I think that's one of the reasons why You know, people with autoimmune disease, for example, very often suffer with depression and anxiety and mental health as part of that. It's not just, it does seem to be a physiological expression. It's not just because, you know, you have an autoimmune disease, that's pretty depressing. It's also because this, the chronic inflammation that they're experiencing physically in their bodies is also creating neuroinflammation in the brain, and that affects the balance of neurotransmitters. So dealing with inflammation, and I've seen this really remarkably actually. I think of one patient in particular with severe anxiety, and we'd worked on every single different area, you know, gut health and working on the genetic basis of her anxiety as well, and making really big steps in progress. But this last bit, you know, and I mean, of course, people are complex, and she'd experienced terrible childhood trauma, and, you know, in some ways I thought maybe this is as far as I can get her, you know. Maybe there's more psychological work that needs to take place as well, and that's part of the picture. But the change that happened when I then went aggressively after neuroinflammation with anti-inflammatories for the brain, that was where, you know, the big jump happened. So, yeah, it's a very big part of mental health is neuroinflammation. Bonnie?
If you have a child who's really keen to be healthy but absolutely loves cow's milk, what would you say to that child?
Cow's milk.
I've got an answer for that. Can I share?
If you want to.
Yeah. Cows, each species feed their young with their own milk. Why should we human beings drink cow's milk? And milk is made for the growth of that species up to a certain age till they can eat normal, you know, adult food. So, yeah.
So I think, you know, I mean, God promised the Israelites a land flowing with milk and honey. I think that in its original form, in its ancient form, in its natural form, dairy was not necessarily a bad thing. And I do have patients who've eaten dairy their whole life and they're fully healthy. They've got a really intact gut. They can cope with it. It's fine. I'm seeing more and more patients, particularly younger ones, coming through. I mean, dairy intolerance and dairy protein allergies are going through the roof. The reason for that is twofold. One is that our cows are being bred generation to generation to generation for higher and higher rates of lactation. So the hormones in that milk is through the roof. That affects girls' hormones. I'm seeing more and more cases of endometriosis, polycystic ovarian syndrome, you know, things that are associated with endocrine disruptors, of which cow's milk is one. The other reason for it is homogenization. Who remembers the milkman coming and dropping the milk off and the cream on the top? So that was back in the day before they homogenized the milk so aggressively that all the fat molecules went all through the milk. When you homogenize milk, it's pushed through a sieve at such a high speed that all the fat particles are broken down and distributed evenly through the milk. The other thing that occurs when that happens is the proteins are broken. And if you look at those proteins under a microscope, you see that they're fractured and torn and broken. And little fragments of those protein, we call them peptides, leak into the bloodstream and trigger the immune system in inflammation. So that is why cow's milk today is a problem. If you've never been primed to have an issue with cow's milk, if your immune system has never had cow's milk get into your bloodstream, like those little peptides get into your bloodstream and trigger your immune system to have that effect with cow's milk, then you could probably sit on a farm and, you know, be okay out of the cow, maybe, because you're eating the natural form that the Israelites had. But, yeah, generally today, it's illegal to sell unhomogenized, unpasteurized milk. So we can't really get hold of it. Donna?
Look, I really agree with all of this. Don't get me wrong. I'm like, amen 100%. But what do you think about then the spiritual, when people pray over the generational sin and release it? So I've seen people be set free from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, what I said at the very beginning about we are an incredible integration of mind, soul, body. God wants to work on all of those areas. So today, as a nutritionist, I'm talking to you about, you know, the physical side of how you can address that part of mental health disorders. And I've, you know, I touched on practicing the peace of God and the joy of the Lord is our strength. You know, that's that spiritual side's really, really important. So that the knowledge that we have these epigenetic tags that could have been passed down from generation to generation to generation, I don't think should make anybody fear or think that, you know, you're doomed now, you've got to have depression because your grandfather did, or you're going to commit suicide because your father did. We are the children of God. We can be set free from all of these things. Absolutely. And there's a whole spiritual aspect to that.
It just doesn't, haven't got time to cover it.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, and yeah. And it's part, you know, I think we have to, I guess what I want to highlight is that a lot of times as Christians, we don't actually talk about the physical. We talk a lot about the spiritual and the emotional side of mental health. We don't talk about honouring God with our bodies and what we put into them as a pathway to wellness and to mental wellness. But that is just as important a step of obedience as part of the package before God. Yeah. Yes, so chlorine in our water supply is a big issue. If you've ever made, has anybody ever made water kefir or kombucha? Yep. You know you can't use tap water when you make fermented drinks because it kills the SCOBY or it kills the bacteria that are making the thing. You have to use purified water. Imagine what that is doing in your gut every day. If you're just drinking out of the tap, you're drinking those chemicals straight in and they just kill bacteria. So they're killing all your good microbiome. I think that's one of the big reasons why we have so much allergies in our kids, microbial imbalance, you know, irritable bowel syndrome, all these different issues absolutely connected to antibiotics, water supply, you know, yeah, chemicals in our water. Fluoride is an interesting one. You know, fluoride as a natural thing, which is good for teeth, is one thing, but the synthetic fluoride they put into water has all sorts of other health issues with it. It's been linked to autoimmune diseases and, you know, all sorts. Yeah.
So to have purified water is the thing? Drink purified water?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So just at least have the chlorine taken out of it. To get fluoride taken out of the water is quite a bigger ask of the water filter. There's newer systems that are coming out that are able to do both, but it used to be that pretty much only reverse osmosis did fluoride as well. Reverse osmosis has its own issues because it takes all the good minerals out as well. So then you've got to, anyway. Yep. Yep.
The question I have on the bath water filters, do they deal with some of those issues you're talking about? So if you drink filtered
There's all
water,
different types of filtered water. The very basic, any basic water filter will take chlorine out. Chlorine's easy to take out. So you can get any good water, any decent water filter will take out chlorine. It's the other chemicals that you need higher levels for. Did you have a question?
What's your perspective on red meat? Like you talked about fish.
Yep. Red meat? Red meat, there's lots of ways in which red meat can be quite inflammatory. Obviously, it's also a very good source of B12 and a source of iron. So it depends on the person, what I would advise in terms of a diet. Red meat that has been grain-fed is extremely inflammatory. So grain-fed meats have a very high omega-6 profile, and we want more of a balance between omega-3 and omega-6 in our diet. Unfortunately, the Western diet... All of our little cells are made of fats, right? We have lipids as part of the wall of our cells. We can actually measure the profile of those. There's tests for this to show what the balance is between omega-3 and omega-6. Omega-3 is, if you think of omega-3 as being anti-inflammatory, omega-6 is very necessary and it's not a bad thing, but if it's in very high levels, it creates an inflammatory profile. And in the Western diet, we tend to have a ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 of 15 to 1. And it's meant to be 1 to 1. So when we're eating grass-fed meats, when we're eating non-free-range eggs from chickens, all those sorts of things, you know, mass-produced, you know, the way we farm things today, it has actually created a different profile. And so that is actually quite inflammatory and damaging to us. So if you are going to eat red meat, eat grass-fed red meats. It, organic doesn't matter so much because if it's grass-fed, it's been out in the fields anyway. So I don't know if that's true. What do you think, Paul? I'll ask you later. Yeah? Yeah, really good question. So the other reason why our microbiome has gone to pot in the modern world and we're getting so much issues, I think, with depression and anxiety and all those things is because up until 100 years ago we didn't refrigerate our food. So, and even in Africa and places like that where they don't have refrigeration, sour milk is like the thing that they drink out of, you know, the cow they got from a few days ago or whatever. They love their sour milk. So fermented foods and fermented drinks are a really good natural God-given way. They're just the God-given probiotics, aren't they? You know. Having said that, I have had some patients, and one that comes to mind recently, where they've been making their own fermented foods at home. And in the Queensland environment, they tend to breed a lot of yeast. And this patient actually became sick with an infection that has really been bad for their bowel. And I think they might have got it from their home ferments. So I'm a little wary of home ferments since then. But under normal circumstances, you know, they're a good, fermented foods are a good way of populating your gut appropriately.
I keep her a lot, but I'm a bit nervous now with what you said about milk. But...
yeah. Well, at least with soured milk, like yogurt, though the proteins have been a little bit broken down. So if you're going to eat, if you're going to have dairy products, then having, you know, yogurt or fermented dairy is a much safer way to go. Yes?
One question. Do you think people should eat bread or different types of bread, or what's your opinion on people eating
Yeah, so that's a really good question about bread. I think I was mentioning before about the genetic modification of wheat and why that's become such a big problem. Somebody once said that wheat is like eating wheat is like putting nail filings down your gut. It just shreds it. And the reason for that is because of the changes to wheat grain over the years, and also there's a whole lot of stuff to do with pesticide use and everything as well. And there's a lot in wheat and gluten that is an irritant to our gut. So most people that have gut issues tend to find that they do better on a gluten or wheat-free diet. Yeah, unfortunately. I tend to recommend a grain-free diet for anybody with an inflammatory condition because of the priming of the immune system as well around some of those, again, those little peptides that can get in to the bloodstream. So there's quite a lot of similarity if you look at the protein structures between gluten and dairy milk and human proteins. And so there's a theory called molecular mimicry, which is one of the ideas of why autoimmune disease develops, which is from these peptides getting into our bloodstream, priming our immune system to then attack us instead of destroying the little peptides from the wheat that have got in and trigger the immune system. So in general, you know, I mean, honestly, I have elderly patients who sometimes come to see me because they're just getting older and they just want help with their nutrition as they age, and they have managed to get to like 80 and be perfectly healthy. They eat a good diet that includes bread and they're fine with it, and they've got healthy guts.
And includes milk.
And it includes milk, you know, and they're really healthy people. I think that they're becoming more few and far between, and I think that's got to do with how healthy their childhood was without a lot of the genetic modification and the changes that we're now living with. I think the modern diet is destroying us. Yeah. Yes, Mrs. Munns.
Just a question about, I know you've mentioned before that there's a possible link between the use of statin and dementia.
Yep.
Can you speak to that and anything else that you think is incriminated with rising rates?
Yep, so statins are... should I... I've gone over time by 5 minutes. I'm happy to stay and answer more questions, but feel free to leave if you need to. So the question was about the use of statins. Statins are drugs prescribed for high cholesterol, and they because the brain is made of cholesterol and statins block all types of cholesterol, although some of the newer statins are starting to be a little bit more specific, but they block all types of cholesterol. So they actually block good cholesterol as well as bad cholesterol. And so that's why the FDA did issue a warning a while back about statins having a link to dementia in old age. And so there was some more caution about the widespread use of them. If your cholesterol is above 8, it is still a very high risk factor for heart disease, though. So I would suggest that you get some help from somewhere rather than just not take the statin. Yep.
Thank you for what you've shared. Some of the journal articles that you quoted, are we able to read those, or are they ones you've subscribed to?
Some of them are ones in the Lancet and things that you wouldn't necessarily have access to. Yeah, yep. But if you are interested in doing your own research and looking at really the medical articles that are available, if you Google PubMed, so PubMed, before whatever it is that you're wanting to find out about, you'll find medical journal articles, some of which do have more than the extract, you know, there for you to have a look at. Paul?
I think it's a good idea for people to look at where their food's coming from, and as groups, go and find dairies that are not feeding. The current thing for what to feed cows is nearly all GMI stuff that people will be planting. So it goes right through the cow.
Yeah.
If you want your food, don't buy it from Woolworths and Coles. It'll all be just garbage. Get stuff that you know is... the farmers have done it the right way, biodynamic or whatever, and then you'll be right.
Yep. So Paul used to be a dairy farmer, and he had a situation where his cows all developed polycystic ovarian syndrome all of a sudden, and he traced it back to the feed that they were getting from a chicken farm that was the antibiotics from the chickens was affecting the grain that the cows were eating, and that was changing their hormones and ruining their milk production. So, you know, we are what we eat.
There's good farmers out there, so do your homework. Get it from Mulaney Dairy or get it from wherever.
Yeah.
And do that with everything you've got.
Yeah.
Don't just eat anything. You're eating rubbish.
Yeah.
Especially tomatoes. Tomatoes have got systemic insecticide, so it kills the bugs. It's going to kill you too. Don't eat it.
It's going to kill your good bugs.
Good.
Yeah. I probably need to wrap it up there.
Be careful.
Yeah. Oh, has she behind Paul? I didn't see. One more.
Can you comment, please, Debbie, on we're talking about statins, high cholesterol, good and bad cholesterol.
Yeah.
What would you say if I was told I needed to go on statins? I told the doctor no. I went to a cardiologist. He explained to me with the algorithm used by the Heart Foundation in Australia how flawed it is. And I had a CT brain contrast scan, calcium score, and I came up with zero cholesterol.
Wow. I don't know much about that.
So the doctor, the GP, had a huge argument with me, would hardly let me leave the surgery, because she said, I need a statin because my cholesterol is too high. The cardiologist told me, and luckily I suppose the one I saw, he said, he looked at my pathology, he listened to what I eat, and I eat a plant-based diet. And he said, I don't think you're going to have a problem. That algorithm the GPs used was flawed.
Wow, I'd love to look into that a little bit more. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I've just had that recently, and I have no cholesterol at all. None of bad stuff.
Yeah. I have been able to work with patients with high cholesterol and see their cholesterol, even with that flawed measurement that is done in the blood, come down using things like sugar wax alcohol esters and, you know, in supplements and dietary, you know, changes as well. You know, you can bring your cholesterol level into a good range. Some people do have genetic issues that cause them to have high cholesterol. So you can be fit, young, and eat healthy and still have high cholesterol because of genetics. But there's still, you know, there's always ways that that you can bring healing and health if you seek God's way.
Amen.
The end.